Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, Dan. Hi, Connor.
The Bernstein and McKnight Show.
What's up, guys?
And he will drive one in the air to deep right field. This is going to be a three-run homer. Josh Bell hammering a three-run homer to right, and the Pirates grab a quick 4-0 lead here in the first inning.
I would not throw him a strike.
Bell hits another drive deep right field. This is going to leave the yard. A curveball this time, and Josh Bell has hit his second home run.
The 2-1 pitch.
Swung on and drilled to right center deep. This ball is back to the wall. Gone. Wow. Josh Bell with a three-homer night.
2-2.
Swing and a miss. This ball game is over. The Pirates win easily by a score of 18-5.
Jeez Louise, that was rough.
Intelligent, in-depth sports talk for your workday.
What they are is they're out there, they're talking, they're yapping, and they're trying their best.
Bernstein and McKnight, middays on The Score.
And members of Three Homer Night, Bernstein and McKnight, broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios, home of the Tucson and Santa Fe Sport. We've got Joe Sheehan scheduled to join us at 10, the midday, midway at 10:40. And Bears star safety Eddie Jackson at 11:20 with surprises along the way as well. 312-644-6767 is the number at WSCR The Score. Email us at Bernstein and McKnight at 670thescore.com. That's where you go to listen to us live, because there we are streaming at 670thescore.com. You want to send a sext, you can, to 67011. When you do, we reply. Message and data rates may apply. Twitter is at Bernstein_MCK. That man is at C1 McKnight. I am at Dan_Bernstein. Download the radio.com app.
Today we are all Megan Rapinoe.
Yep. There's fun stuff going on.
I hope they put up six. I don't want it to stop. They don't have to apologize for scoring goals at all, and you don't have to be demure when you're beating the hell out of an opponent, and maybe that's what happens today against England. I wouldn't be surprised at all.
Another 13 spot, maybe really
be fine with me.
Celebrate Independence.
Settle for half a dozen.
Perfect timing for Independence Day.
I didn't think of right? That.
You know, right. Just kind of twist the knife a little bit. Yeah, you know.
I'm in.
Won that war, won it again. When you download the radio.com app, you can stream The Score on your mobile devices, interact with the show and the station on Facebook by liking the 670 The Score page. We have a video feed. It's Brian Gertsch. I see him right there.
Yeah, there he is.
Yeah, and he directs the video feed at watch670thescore.com and Facebook Live. And back in our production studio around the corner this way or that way, however we're going these days, Jay Zawoski, Rick Camp, and the Mexicutioner Ray Diaz doing what he does. Yeah, that was a tough watch last night.
It really was.
From jump.
Everything was barreled against Adbert Alzolay. That was really quite something. And you caught something right away when you were watching. I saw it a little bit later because, boy, I was just stunned by the level of contact and the quality of power that Pirates lineup put up last night. Josh Bell is one hell of a hitter. He's one of the best players in that division, one of the best in the National League. He is still a horrifyingly bad first baseman, but nobody cares if you're mashing dingers like that. This team, this Cubs team now, is in a spot where it's got to be a little bit introspective. It's got to look at itself after wearing one last night. It's 1-162. So it's one thing to make too much. It's very easy to make too much out of a game where you get walloped like that. It is another thing, though, to use the opportunity to examine exactly where and how you're going to go about your business for the next month. And that's not just, you know, that's just not them. That's observers of the team as well, because so many have called and are calling for moving the deck chairs around, you know, and making sure that this thing is as set or as awake as it possibly can be as it lurches and struggles.
I know that
July
feeling.
31st.
That fans tend to think, act, do something.
Mm-hmm.
Make this stop by doing something. Do something drastic. Validate my fears by pushing a button of some kind. And often that's just not the way it works, because activity for activity's sake is a fool's errand.
Yeah, I mean, the moves that they could make are fraught with danger. I mean, if you look at trade targets out there, if you look at, you know, call-ups that you could make, none of these things should be done if only to send a message through that clubhouse. It presumes, at least to me, it presumes the fact that they're not aware that the Cubs 25 in that clubhouse that have won a World Series, that have by and large talked about a massive amount of urgency and accountability coming into the season, that somewhere over the last 5 weeks that they've all just turned off their brains. I don't think that's the case. Do you think that's the case?
No.
For professional athletes, guys who have been there before? I have a really tough time believing that. I have a tough time believing that clubhouse doesn't go into the office every morning thinking just a little bit about the fact that their manager is in the last year of his contract and that they'd probably like to keep him around, likely by playing a lot better than they have. I don't think that any kind of move should be looked at from you need to send a message to these guys.
Well, that's never worked.
It doesn't work. It can send a message, but a move shouldn't be made so that Chris Bryant starts hitting with runners in scoring position.
No, that's not the way they operate. That's not the way this regime has ever operated. They're not going to do something unless they think it actually makes them more likely to win a title.
That's the case. You've got to make moves to make this lineup better. And from that end, you got to ask questions about what's out there for you and at what price levels you can shop. And unfortunately for the Cubs, as I see it right now, the what's out there might be some impressive bats and might be some things that fix the lineup. But the price levels that you may have to get to, I don't know that you can play poker at that table.
You don't have the resources because you haven't developed enough in your system to start doing that. You've made those moves. And when you say these guys on other teams, be they Eloy Jimenez or Gleyber Torres or Dan Vogelbach or Dylan Cease, you've had every opportunity to draft guys highly and develop them and move them for pieces within your window, but you're running out of pieces. You're running out of trade chips because you haven't had guys come in and develop behind them. That's been the problem. Ready for a mosquito-free summer, Chicago? Just call True Green. They'll eliminate biting mosquitoes in your yard within 24 hours of application, guaranteed. Call 1-866-TRUE-GREEN or visit truegreen.com/mosquito-free-summer. Additional restrictions may apply. See truegreen.com for details.
So where are you at headed forward? Albert Alzolay struggled and struggled hard last night. You figure that he could be part of the roster exchange when Kyle Hendricks comes off the injured list. I don't think that if Alzolay is sent down that it's going to be because of his outing. I don't think it's going to be because he got rocked last night.
No, there were all kinds of issues with Alzolay. He's got problems on the arm side. It seems like his ability to work the glove side of the plate is better than what's happening on his arm side. And there's too many non-competitive pitches, too many easy, obvious balls out of his hand, especially on his arm side.
They were on everything he threw in the strike zone last night and on it for power, which makes managers guess and wonder whether or not pitch tipping could be an issue. Joe Maddon actually alluded to it in a brief post-game conference last night. Joe wasn't around for a whole lot of talking, but when he was, he did pose this as a potential issue for last night's starter, Albert Alzolay.
I don't like to overreact to anything, so we'll stop and look at it. From the very beginning, I mean, it was really, the only part that was curious is that they were on everything. So I was like, is he tipping pitches? That's my first thought. Is there something there that we can fix that takes away the advantage that the other team may have?
So I get that. You know, especially a kid like that making his, second big league start, third appearance in the major leagues, you could kind of see how a guy might have his eyes glaze over a little bit as he's just, you know, turning over the shoulder each and every time he throws something down the middle. And you kind of get into whatever rhythm and forget some of the finer details of pitching, and maybe you are grabbing that slider a little bit different. Or maybe
there's all kinds of ways to tip pitches.
Tipping that mid a little bit.
I was going to say you're squeezing something in the glove,
maybe
you
come set in a different spot.
Yep.
Yeah, all that kind of stuff happens. And I don't, you know, I still think that as this team, and I think the Cubs have the talent to win the NL Central. I really do. I don't see Milwaukee and I don't see the Cardinals as big a threat as I did when the season started. I think it'll be a competitive division. I don't think it's going to be won by anything more than 91, probably. And I think the Cubs have the ability to do that. they just can't be as frustrating as this over the last 35 games or so and get you there. I think that this offense has enough top end talent to float the rest of the lineup for a little while. And I think Adbert Alzolay is going to be a guy who factors in the bullpen when he comes back up, because I think that's a more likely move than not for them to get themselves through a couple of weeks, if not more than that. He just may have to go back down and stretch some things out in order to make the best move for the bullpen as you and the rotation as you get into the deadline, in the trade all-star break, rather.
There's no question that Alzolay has a live arm, and he just doesn't look major league. He did not look like a major league pitcher last night.
No, he didn't have everything. He looked like a two-pitch guy, and they were on both pitches. You know, I mean, he looked like a two-pitch guy who needs to throw out of the pen and shoot some flames that way.
We're going to get to an update, after which I want to reset what's going on with the overall and the starting rotation, because there's a couple issues right now as we're starting to get some kind of sense of what's happening with Cole Hamels. Now, I guess they have read the MRI, but we don't necessarily know the results. And why Kyle Hendricks is coming directly back to start tonight.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Bernstein and McKnight talking about the Cubs' implosion last night in Pittsburgh. That was one of those that forces a little bit of a reckoning. You say, all right, what are we doing here? How are we a team that allows something like that to happen to us? And I know it's baseball, and I know that good teams have bad games, but there are clearly issues with this lineup. Now, I had speculated when we found out that Cole Hamels had removed himself because of an oblique strain, that we know that with him, when he was with Texas, the last time that happened to him, a very similar injury, it was 2 months.
And he felt he came back a little early.
Correct.
And he felt that affected him for quite a while, almost right up until he was dealt to the Cubs last season anyway.
Yeah, and we have heard estimates of the weeks, plural. I am setting out optimistically 6 to 8 weeks. That's not based on, I'm not reporting it based on anything that I know, but just because it's now a 35-year-old guy who's going through this again, we've got the timetable on it.
Well, you're the captain of worry, so
that's right, I'm
in
charge.
We all have to find out where you're at on the worry spectrum, and then we can base our estimations off of that.
So it's not really worry. It's just more realism for that injury, this guy at this age.
You would say that. You're the captain of worry.
Yeah, but that's not really worry.
We'll promote you to colonel as soon as you admit that it's really, really worry.
Here's what I find interesting. That Kyle Hendricks is coming back from shoulder impingement, taking the mound tonight in Pittsburgh with no rehab start.
Not a single one.
Now, this is something that I've asked about. And apparently how this works is the player must agree to a rehab start. I also know it is generally always discussed, at least, and more often than not advised to work back slowly. Mm-hmm. What I don't know is how hard-headed Hendricks may have been in this regard, and whether or not he's motivated by a desire to help his team. Is he coming back early? Is he coming back right to a major league mound early? I think it's fair to ask how this got to this point with no rehab start at all.
Yeah, I think that's probably a fair question. He's been out since June 14th. That was his last start against the Dodgers. He was hit around there, 4 1/3, 5 runs, 5 earned, 2 walks, a couple of dingers. It was a rough one for him. He had been pitching well before that, really well before that. Maybe the ace of the Cubs rotation since the beginning of May when he went out and threw a complete game shutout against the Cardinals. Maybe that was his Maddux game, right? 81 pitches, complete
Correct.
Game shutout, that whole thing. But I think, too, there might be a tendency for somebody rested, like Hendricks might feel right now, especially if he's feeling healthy enough, to come out and superhero a little bit, come out and put a couple innings on his shoulders, especially with Hamels down.
Shoulder.
With the way things have pitched lately, I wouldn't be too surprised. But on the other hand of that, what do we say about Hendricks all the time and his mechanics and when he feels he's locked in? He is a guy, he's one of those pitchers who we're told knows himself, you know, who knows those mechanics and knows his
delivery. Yeah, but he can take advantage of that too. You can take advantage of that reputation by saying, look, I'm ready. Who knows what he knows and who knows what he would be risking as far as coming back too early or not trying to prove it on a minor league mound.
That's absolutely true.
A lot of callers lined up to jump into the Bernstein and McKnight show. This is Mark in St. Charles on the Score. Mark.
What's up, man?
Hey, Dan, sorry about that. My son was asking for a running clock yesterday, but the Listella pickup or not picking up Listella, I think, was a big mistake. And kind of you're mentioning what's the next big move. Mully alluded to it. Designate Descalso for assignment. He clearly is not doing anything.
Yeah, I think that's something that's within their realm of control. I don't know that going out and getting a big impact bat is something that's going to fit their ability to pay. But sure, I mean, you could designate Descalso, you could eat that money, call it a mea culpa, and then go down and call up Robel Garcia. But as fun as a guy like Robel Garcia has been, and designating Descalso would give you, after he goes through the process, would give you a spot on the 40-man roster. Robel Garcia comes with an exorbitant strikeout rate. He hits a lot of home runs, but as fun and as much of a homegrown kind of, you know, find the swing path kind of guy as he is, it's not as though he is different necessarily than some of the other profiles you have in this offense. And if you're looking to diversify the product within the lineup, I don't know that Robel Garcia does that for you. Is that a reason to not call him up? No, probably not. That's not saying that he's not Ben Zobrist of 2012 is not a reason to make a move when Descalso's been as bad as he has.
Does he make you more likely to score runs, regardless of how he does it?
More likely than Daniel Descalso? Yeah, I would imagine.
In Saginaw, Michigan, it's Bobby on Sports Radio 670. Good morning, Bobby.
Hey, gentlemen, good morning. You know, like you guys, obviously I do feel the Cubs have enough talent to win the NL Central. But what's frustrated me about, you know, the organization the last couple of years is the lack of developing those prospects down in the minor leagues. You know, it's easy to draft in the top five and hopefully get yourself a blue chip, high, well-regarded prospect. But when you look at teams that have been winning the last 5 years, the Dodgers, the Astros, the Yankees, they still have a lot of talent in the minor leagues. And what's going to, you know, hamper the Cubs' ability to improve the roster is that they don't have these. There should be more David Bodies coming up.
Yep.
And I just use them as an example, but
yep,
you know,
there
should be more of those guys. You know, you can talk all you want about improving the roster and who can they get and who can they not get, but the larger question is why don't they have more assets in the minor leagues that other teams view as prospects?
You're absolutely bang on.
Nailed it.
And the Astros and the Dodgers are doing it better.
Mm-hmm.
They're just doing it better. And I don't know if the Cubs were late to the party on how to look at some of the, how to develop, how to look at swing path, how to manage some of these pitch, how to create pitches. And they talk about their pitch lab.
Hell, maybe they're looking at it differently.
Yep.
Maybe they thought they had something a little bit different than the Dodgers, had something looked at a little differently than the Dodgers or Astros have done it, and maybe they ended up on the wrong side of that equation. I agree with you that there should have been, up to this point, more David Bodies, because I think that's the level of player that we're looking at here. I think they've done a great job developing their superstars. I think they get a lot of credit for, even though Javier Baez wasn't their draft pick, I think when an organization takes a guy like Javier Baez with all of that swing and miss and all of that boom or bust potential as a prospect into a major leaguer, the way Javi Baez has developed into a top-tier major leaguer, I think the organization deserves a little credit for that. Javi does too, obviously, for being willing to work the way he has. But there have not been the kind of, you know, 110, 105, 100 weighted runs created plus type guys that just fill in spots the rest of the way.
You should be developing replacement level players who are above replacement level.
Even if slightly.
That's what I mean.
Even if
like
slightly.
The value in that, if you are doing that consistently, the value in having a reserve of your next level guys who, like you say, are WRC plus of over 100. And we use that number a lot. And if you hear us talk about weighted runs created plus, mm-hmm. it's the simplest and best measure of a player's offensive ability. And all you need to know is 100 is average. Anything below 100 is by percentage points below average. Anything above 100 is percentage points above.
And 58 is Daniel Descalzo.
And Daniel Descalzo is 58, and Josh Bell is 159.
Oh my God,
right?
Is he good?
So I mean, it's the perfect, elegant number to express how good a hitter, how productive an offensive player somebody is. And it's a stat that a lot of the best baseball analysts use just because of how easy it is to understand and how simple it is.
I want to get to a couple phone calls when we get back. Cubs fans, how
a lot of people out
did
today.
Last night make you feel, and what is it that you need to see in July? But I'll tell you one thing that won't happen. I keep seeing this on Twitter. There's 1, 2, 3, 4 texts already about this. There is one thing that you want that's not happening the way you see it. I will tell you what it is when we get back. It's Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
Give them credit. They barreled up. How many did they have?
23.
I think all 23 of them, maybe 22. They were really impressive offensively. You can't take that away from them. They were that good.
Yeah, that's more than a tip your cap to him game, though, because you got to figure out how they were able to be jumping out of their shoes at every single pitch. And you can go back on film and see what you think they might have seen, because when a guy's tipping, that's what it looks like.
Yeah, I mean, there were enough of those you don't put that there moments from whether it was Alzolay or whether it was Brad Brock. There are a couple of moments where it's like, you can't throw that pitch there. That's not a thing you're able to do. Did you also know? I didn't know this. This seems way too low for me. Adam Frazier, out of the leadoff spot for the Pirates history, tied a major league record. Any idea what the record might have been?
A major league record.
Nobody has done this more times than Adam Frazier did this yesterday.
I don't know. Does it have to do with exit velocity?
No. He had 4 doubles.
Oh. No one's ever had more than 4 doubles?
Well, everybody's like tied at 4. It's like a list of players, just hundreds of players that all have like 4 doubles in a game, but nobody's ever hit 5 doubles in a game. The only other Pirates player to ever record a 4-double game, it's Wehner, right? The guy from the 1932 Hall of Fame.
Paul Wehner and Lloyd Wehner.
Yeah, okay.
Big Poison, Little Poison.
Paul Wehner.
I forget which one is Big Poison and which one is Little Poison. If the stories behind that are somebody in Brooklyn, Big Poison, Little Poison. But
no, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. That's great.
Yeah, that's
I didn't know that.
That's one of the stories. I just forget which is big and which is little and why. It's not because they were poisonous or venomous or anything like that. It's Big Poison and Little Poison.
That's funny.
Right?
Before
I get to the call, the phone line's absolutely popping this morning, but you said it was something that people want to happen. It's not going
to
happen.
People need to stop. I get why you want to know. I get why you're asking. But you got to realize, Whit Merrifield, the all-star second baseman for the Kansas City Royals, the dude who has he's leading the league in total bases at 178. He's got himself a slash line that's real pretty, an OPS at 850. That dude, he's not going anywhere for just a guy like Kyle Schwarber. That's not happening. When the Royals signed him to the deal they signed him to, which is just preposterously low because he was a late call-up. He didn't come up till he was like 27.
He's 30 now, isn't he?
30 now, yeah. And he's getting paid like it's $1 million this year, $5 million next year, $6-7 with some performance bonuses in 2021. I mean, he's on this ridiculously team-friendly team contract, Royals contract. The Royals, I can tell you this, the Royals see him, and this is on the Royals, but they see him as a long-term foundational piece and would have to be bowled over by an offer for Whit Merrifield. That's just how they're looking at him. Whether that's right or wrong, whether you like it or don't, that's how they're looking at him, and they will need much, much more than Kyle Schwarber for Whit Merrifield, even though that would go a long ways to fixing the way this Cubs offense looks. That's not happening.
This
not
is
that way.
Chip and Burbank on the Score.
Morning, guys. You know, watching the Cubs and Sox over the last month, the one thought that keeps bouncing around in my head is, who's going to get the 500 first? The Cubs, if you think about it, in every aspect of the game, whether it be running, hitting, pitching, fielding, they've blown each one of those scenarios away. And the one thing last night, I just wanted to point out.
I don't understand what you mean by they've blown those scenarios away. I don't understand.
Well, I'm sorry. I was getting a little angry by the way they've been playing. I mean, the base running, we saw what happened, a double play with the bags loaded. Come on. I'm running, not on even a batted ball. Fielding has been funny. Everything. The hitting hasn't been there.
Yeah, they haven't
there.
Played well.
No. And then last night's game, it's kind of funny how one moment kind of defines a game. In the inning when the Cubs were down 7-4, Pittsburgh had the bags loaded, two outs, the pitcher's at the plate. First two pitches, strikes. Third pitch, the pitcher fouls it off. What bothered me was every one of those three pitches was in the same location. Fine. The fourth pitch should have been high inside to kind of just let the pitcher know I can throw something different.
Yeah.
Instead, he throws the fourth pitch in the same location. And I've always known that a major league, even if he's a pitcher, a major league man with a bat in his hand, you throw the ball in the same spot four times, what did he do? He just threw his bat into that area and knocked the ball in the right field.
Thank you, Chip. Appreciate the call as always. Joe in Elk Grove Village, you're on Sports Radio 670.
Hi, good morning, guys. I'm going to just ask a question and give you an example of what I'm trying to say. You know, Joe's been with most of these players for 4, maybe even 5 years.
Yeah.
And I was just wondering, you know, I only hear Joe after, like, in a news conference talk about players. And I'm just wondering if players are getting too much of a free pass on their play. I know that in baseball, putting more pressure on players actually backfires. But I'll give you an example. Like last week when Tyler Chatwood pitched, and he gave up 6 runs in I think it was 5 innings. And then afterwards at a news conference, Joe said something about how he battles. And I'm thinking, I don't think 6 runs in 5 innings is really much of a battle. And I'm just wondering if in the back of their mind the guys keep saying, yeah, I guess I did okay, or you know what I mean? Something
no.
where...
Mm-mm. These are don't professional players.
No. Especially not a guy like Chatwood, who knows what he did last season and how obviously horrendous that was and what he's capable of doing. Now, I don't think that Joe's out there making excuses for guys. Even if you do see it as making excuses for guys, I don't think those guys are buying those excuses. I mean, it's a team that's won more games than anybody else in the last 4 seasons. They've averaged 95 wins or so. They've won divisions. They've won a World Series. Like you don't just start clicking into all of these excuse patterns for yourself. You don't see that. I think if you're looking on the other side of things, if you're looking for a little bit of lining around the cloud, you've got a schedule in July that's a lot kinder to you than June has been. 8 off days in the month of July.
The lining's inside the cloud, right?
The lining would be outside. No, the silver lining?
Inside.
Why would the lining be?
Because the silver lining's inside the cloud.
It outlines.
No, it inlines. It's a lining. Like the lining of your jacket is on the inside of your jacket.
Let's ask Bruce Weber.
it's on the inside. The silver light, it's a cloud outside. Well, what's the silver light? We see the cloud, but you're hopeful that inside the cloud, what you can't see, is the silver lining.
Why would a cloud have a
cool.
lining?
Cool.
Well, you said it's the lining outside the cloud. Then you'd be able to see it.
Wherever you need your lining. You've got the White Sox for 2. You get the Pirates again, Padres, Giants, and then a couple with the Cardinals and Brewers. So there's a little bit of easy picking when you... after you get back to the rest of your division in July, and hopefully you've got a couple of days to get yourself rested. I know that one thing Cubs fans hate maybe more than anything else is hearing about the schedule, but I think burying your head in the sand about it is probably the wrong thing to do, too. I mean, you don't look at 50 and 52 and just go, oh, you got to do it. And
let's
it doesn't work.
Close out to this lively bank of calls with Trey in Hammond, Indiana, on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. Hey, Trey.
Good morning. I was just calling to speak on with the caller before the break was speaking on about the Cubs prospects and having more David Bodies coming up and those things. Like, I totally agree with the caller, but we did have those players. We had Eloy Jimenez, we had Gleyber Torres, and then the Dylan Cease and those type of dudes, and we traded them all away to win now. Why we needed Jose Quintana, we could have kept Eloy Jimenez, I don't know. But we had those type of prospects in our farm system mm-hmm. and had the number one farm system in baseball for a couple years in a row. So we definitely had those type of players, and they just traded them all away.
Well, and they did win the World Series. And nobody wants to hear that, but that needs to be said. They did it. They did trade those guys. They did, in part, win the World Series because of some of those moves.
Absolutely.
However, you are right. What you have to do is develop talent, create value from something other than your highest picks. That's where you win this thing. Found value. Read the MVP machine. Read about how teams are doing this, how teams are looking at their pitching staffs differently, how Houston completely revamped the way they looked at their pitchers. And it's brilliant where they said, essentially, that there's this aha moment in the book where one of the executives in Houston says, we're doing it wrong. Instead of looking at all these pitchers and trying to complete their arsenals, find out which 90-plus percentile pitch each guy has. What's the one thing you do really, really, really well? Do that all the time. And instead of trying to round out everybody, they're able to find guys. And this is not necessarily your top guys, but looking at just the fodder in your organization, just all of the draft picks, most of whom will amount to nothing.
Most. Yeah.
Maybe you find three guys. Maybe you find four guys. Maybe you find two. Maybe one. But if you can get something out of nothing just because you stripped him down and said, do what you do well and we'll reinvent everything off of that pitch, all of a sudden, you start doing that with every draft class, finding one of those guys. That's how you build value.
Yeah. Once you do that, you sign them to a David Bodie contract or a Whit Merrifield contract, and then you build that value into some free agent possibilities. They've done it once or twice. They understand that it's there. It's just the quantity of it, which has a quality all its own. It's not there for the Cubs.
Joe Sheehan is going to fix everything, so don't go anywhere. He comes up next on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.